Where is he? Let me just say that the one thing I'd like to do, I just love looking at you all. Good to see you. All right.
It's a good looking group.
Yeah. I'll bring down the property values, but we do what we can. I've written this because I don't want to go just out into the ionosphere. Okay. It seems that whenever I stand up, I confront a proverbial crossroads. There is a possibility of a black President Obama, which is wondrous, and let's hope it happens, but I'm far from sanguine. And there's a truth that just yesterday in the New York Times, we're told that one out of three black and Latino middle-class people, some holding two jobs, which is what it means to be middle class for us, are on the cusp of losing everything. They have no assets beyond their home, if they have that. And through the subprime crisis and the ways in which capital keeps us proverbial sharecroppers, we are all yet again living on borrowed time. I can't help but think of the old chants, "Ain't I black or blue? Or Lord, why leave me here?" Or as my aunt used to say, "Ain't this a mess?" And this is the middle class. Many of us come from families where these worries seem quixotic. For some of us, there was never even the hope of a mortgage. There was hardly anything but our providential spirit. Like Toni Morrison's characters, many of us lived on whatever we had, butter sandwiches, did what we could, learned to move on fumes, on stamina that denied all naysaying. And we're still here, as old Sojourner Truth, buked and scorned, but still struggling. We, in Ralph Ellison's phrase, employed a bit of shit, wit, and mother wit. I'm sorry about this shit, but we gotta do it. People such as myself are at rich institutions, and we need to make these institutions worthy of us, and I mean that. The future of Minority Studies Project came out of long discussions by many in this room who were worried that people of color and those who supported them were far too often stultified in the academy. The statistics, in fact, are daunting. In the 70s and 80s, half of the minority faculty failed to reach tenure. And many of these professors left their colleges and universities within the first 2 years. They didn't even go through the process. As the few people of color came into the professoriate, they increasingly either left for lack of support or just as powerfully grew sullen, losing much of their creative energy to the dangerous self-infestation and nullification that lack of community and its attendant pain brings. When I began teaching at Cornell in 1976, I was the second person of color in my department's history, and I often sensed that I had to take political positions in which I hardly believed. I was the only one. The world demanded that I argue this or that. Sometimes I felt I was simply a talking agitprop. But even more horrific, it was only after more people of color joined me, and God thank they were there, that I realized how misshapen and narrow my life had become. When you live in a world not of your choosing, you begin to think that the only possible world is one as disfigured and disfiguring as the one you presently inhabit. When more people like me arrived, I suddenly realized how abject my life had become. I now had choices. I know this sounds crazy, but it was almost as if I had just learned that I had functioning fingers and toes. You can't dream when you are truly in crisis. Crisis at bottom is the inability to dream. For the Academy, and there are great things here, please don't misunderstand me, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have these places, can often turn us against ourselves or use our rightful sense of alienation to neutralize us, which will kill you no less powerfully than the Klan or Karl Rove. Do you recall how Larry Summers, the president of Harvard, criticized Professor Cornel West for working on Al Sharpton's mayoralty campaign? Do you all remember that?
Yes.
To President Summers, Professor West should have been toiling at Harvard, endlessly helping the lives of the overclass, which, by the way, Cornell did. His students admired him. He taught them well. That he traveled to New York City on the weekends did not impinge on his Harvard teaching. And since when did Harvard care whom one supported for office? But what President Summers failed to acknowledge was that Cornel West could only remain at Harvard had he had a profound connection to the black community that ultimately sustained him, which is why he preached each week in Roxbury. For President Summers, Harvard was life. For Cornel West, Harvard was a job, a wonderful job, but a job nonetheless.
All right.
We all come from somewhere, and we neglect that community at grave cost. Cornel West, of course, was fortunate to be able to stand up to Summers. He had the wisdom, collegial support, and institutional mobility to prevail. He was at Princeton faster than I could bat an eye, right? He was there faster than President Summers could demean all the women in terms of their relationship to science. But most people are not that fortunate, and this is one of the prime reasons we invite you here. We need you as you need us. I remain an isolate unless I have community, and community is strength. And though I can't always say that you will prevail, without community, you are like a cut worm chasing its severed half. At bottom, many of us believe that experience can either bind us together in healthy and evocative ways or blind us. The fact that I grew up in Harlem taught me much. But the fact that my parents were both professionals meant that I did not fully comprehend many of the underlying class issues. I still do not always comprehend them. And this, too, is at the center of what FMS believes. Each of us has strengths and shortcomings, and they are centrally connected to the prism of our experience. As I am writing this, I am conscious of how much of my language involves similes about the body disfigured and misshapen, for example. Toby Sievers, one of our most distinguished executive board members, made all of us confront the major importance of disability studies to our conception of progressive identity studies. When Toby first gave a paper, I was astonished not only at his brilliance, but how I hadn't even conceived of what was a logical and imperative axis to our work. And remember that I had a sister who didn't breathe for 6 minutes, though she is very high functioning. And I speak to her daily. I do. I talk to her for 1 minute every day, and it means everything to me, and I hope it means something to her. Experience can bind, but it can also blind. In Harlem, my father traded 75% of his patients grass. He was a socialist, though he would not call himself that, and I think that's, by the way, a problem. And I recall that my parents and Reverend Adam Clayton Powell and William Kunstler meeting about the creation of the Committee on Africa. And Dr. Martin Luther King telling my father to lay off the apple pie. My father loved the sweets, as I helped plan the Poor People's March. Like the Future of Minority Studies project, food, politics, and good humor are inextricably linked. My parents wheeled themselves into the community and grew greater because of it. And they would open the first neighborhood community center and neighborhood health clinic in Harlem. If you live somewhere, you do what must be done and find celebration and community. And I'd say the same to you. I've learned a great deal from the people around me, which is the great strength of the Future of Minority Studies project. There are scholars and activists here who argue powerfully for the best in us and have fun too. I'm just so tired of these dull things. I told those things. I still have a headache. Here, people aren't going to talk about their awards or books, but I'll tell you that no program or university can match the collective output or insight espoused daily, even in every minutiae. If there's something I most value, it is that here we are not afraid to be who we are, warts and all. I'm delighted that there's a place where a young scholar caught in her moment of disgust, discovery, or terror can simply say, I'm human, I'm vulnerable, I don't know about something, please listen to me. Here we talk about scholarship, how to read and argue well, and tenure. About what it feels like to be the one person of color or ethnicity or sexual persuasion. Here, for the first time, someone may tear up because something so long repressed is given light. And each of us, in his or her own way, knows that feeling or will know it. Satya and Chandra Mahanti and Beverly Garshaptal and Helena Viramontes and Ernesto Martinez and Dan Little are all very accomplished and complex souls. But what I most like is that I can guarantee that Satya Mahanti will flash his oceanic smile and tell a small joke, a very small joke, an infinitesimally small joke. And Beverly Guy Schiffel will have the most stellar of shoes. And Chandra will have the most beautiful necklace. And people will truly be happy to see you. There's no preparing a face to meet that face. You've got to meet, as Mr. Elliott says. We've got too much work to do. There's simply real concern and love. There's a war out there, and walls everywhere, and people saying, no, you can't live, love, or dream. But here, you're among friends. And that's not an excuse for bad thinking, or small-mindedness, or bad behavior. Good friends will call you on that. And I know in the seminar that you're all in, and in later discussions, people will not tolerate intellectual laziness. And I've been brought up resolutely by many in this room for my many moments of wantonness. But I have always felt valued. That's an essential thing. This is a place in which tough love is the highest recommendation. The struggle for community, like the struggle for clarity, is difficult work. But it all begins with trust. Welcome. I'm so pleased you're here. And I mean, thank you.